Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
The following is a lecture on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita given by His Holiness Gopala Krishna Goswami Maharaj, recorded on 22nd of June 2007 in Washington, USA.
Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana bala bhai jwala dhari Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om agyanti nandasya jnananjana shalakya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kalamayam Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Yuta Padakamam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa, Shri Rupam Sarvarajatam, Sarvatandidam Tam Sajivam, Sarvetam Savadhutam, Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padhar, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakha Vitasha, He Krishna, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namonsute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavane Shuri, Vishavan Sutilele, Pranamani Hime, Vancha Kapatarvyasya, Kripa Sindhu Vayucha, Adhikaram Bhavadevyo, Vaishnavyo Namo. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Advaita Gadadhara, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
So today, as we should, we are supposed to discuss what? Chaitanya Charitamrita. But then Chaitanya Charitamrita is a very vast subject matter. So we will just discuss Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, specifically the 6 points he gave regarding surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as you know, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahe Anya. Which means that Radha and Krishna appeared in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now it is a fact that till Prabhupada established the ISKCON movement, Lord Chaitanya was not so widely known. Am I right? I myself heard of Lord Chaitanya after I came to ISKCON. But that doesn't deny the fact that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is supported in the scriptures also. In ISKCON temple you see that on the left there is the altar of Sri Chaitanya Gaura-Nithai. And in some temples we only have Gaura-Nithai. In some temples we have 3 altars. The Lord appears in different forms. And the Gaura-Nithai altar represents Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is the incarnation of Lord Balaram. And Nitya means eternal. And Ananda means pleasure. So it is said that one who takes shelter of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is going to achieve the blessing of the world, and it is like taking shelter of thousands, millions of moons and suns put together. You can imagine the effulgence a million of suns and moons are put together. There's a very nice prayer by Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur was the son of a king, he was a prince, and he gave us many wonderful compositions glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in one of his famous bhajans he says, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Daya Kora More, Toma Bina Kiya Dayalu Jagata Sansare. He says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please be merciful unto me because you are the most merciful of all incarnations. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada Yada Yadharma Sakinari Bhavati Bharata, he appears from time to time. Why? To establish dharma. So, Narottam Das Thakur is praying that you have appeared specifically to save the fallen people of Kali Yuga. And there is nobody more fallen than me. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna's Kaviraj, you read that the nature of a devotee is he doesn't think he has even a drop of love of God. That's the symptom of an advanced devotee. He doesn't think he has even a drop of love of God. Whereas we see the neophytes, they act in such a way as if they have gallons of love of God, isn't it? And they will boast and be presented as big paramahansas and this and that. But the devotee thinks that he's the most fallen. And Narottam Das Thakur says, I am the most fallen. So you might claim, for your mercy is first. Just like in a family, the parents give the maximum attention to the youngest child. Because the youngest child is most dependable on the parents. So Narottam Das Thakur says, I am the most fallen, therefore my claim to your mercy is first. And then he goes on to say, he prays to Lord Nityananda, Mahaprabhu Nityananda, Premananda Sukhi. He said, my dear Lord Nityananda, you are in full bliss because you are fully engaged in service of the Lord. And I am unhappy, so please be merciful unto me so that I can also become blissful. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been described as the hidden avatar, Gupta avatar. That means he is God, but he never advertises himself as God. It's God appearing in the role of a devotee. In fact, whenever someone would say, are you God? Are you Krishna? What would he do? Close his ears and deny. But nevertheless, Lord Chaitanya did also exhibit superhuman qualities, superhuman pastimes. These days, we often meet people who advertise themselves as paramahansas, bhagwans. But if we ask them to do one extraordinary act, leela, I remember a year ago I was taking part in an interfaith dialogue and one Swami, he had an excellent academic background, was very educated. But he came up to me and said, why do you people say there's only one Krishna? So I said, how many Krishnas are there then? He said, we're all Krishnas. So I said, when Krishna appeared on the planet, he performed superhuman activities, such as, and I listed some of them. Can you perform any of them? So he said, just because we haven't performed them as yet, doesn't mean we can't perform in future. So I said, how many years do you want for lifting Govardhan Hill? How many years? gymnasium practice. So they had no answer. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, though appearing as a devotee, he nevertheless also performed superhuman activities. You know the story how Nimai was young. When Brahman had come to his house, Nimai's father's name was Jagannath Misra and his mother's name was Sachi Mata. So when Brahman had come to their house, so Jagannath Misra took care of the Brahman, received him very nicely and begged him to take prasad. Brahman generally do their own cooking. So this Brahman did his cooking and he was offering to the Lord. Naughty Nimai came and ate from the plate where the offering was going on. So naturally, if you eat from the plate where the offering is going on, you can't offer to the Lord. So Jagannath Misra didn't like it that his son was being discourteous to his guest. So he persuaded the Brahmin to again cook prasad. He did that. And the second time also, what did Nimai do? Came and ate out of it. Now the father was really angry. He said, he's our guest. And this is the way we treat him. The Brahmin, on the other hand, was very surrendered. One of the qualities of a Brahmana is he never complains. In mature life, we're always complaining, isn't it? We're always saying, this guy did this to me, this guy did this to me, I'm in trouble because of this guy's politics. But a Brahmin understands that the Lord is the supreme controller, and even if he is in a difficult position, he doesn't mind it. So the Brahmin was content. He thought, the Lord wants me to go hungry today. But Jagannath Misra said, no! This is not proper, you're our guest. So he was persuaded to, again, cook. But this time it was midnight, and Jagannath Misra locked up his son at a distance. So the Brahmin was again doing the offering. Again, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed up, Nimai showed up. And he showed up again, and again, when he showed up, the Brahmin was shocked. He said, how did he show up again? Your father said that he locked you up in a room. So then, Nimai was the Lord's childhood name. So Nimai said, why are you upset? You're offering this to me after all, isn't it? So when he heard that, the Brahmin said, Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu. Look at this offensive child. He claims it is the incarnation of God. And then, what did Nimai do? He revealed his form of Shyamasundara. And he told the Brahmin, now you've seen this form, please don't tell anyone. So the Brahmin was in a real dilemma. On the one hand, he knew that Nimai is God. On the other hand, he was ordered by the Lord not to reveal this to anyone. So there are many wonderful childhood parts in the Nimai. And you know the puppy story? We don't need to misunderstand this story. Nimai was young and he had a puppy. There were many puppies. So Nimai took the most beautiful puppy and brought it home. So Nimai's mother said, we are Brahmins. We can't keep a puppy dog in our house. I'm going to leave home and go away. Anyway, Nimai insisted on keeping the puppy home. So one day, the puppy was not at home. And everyone began to search. Where's the puppy gone? Then they found that the puppy dog was in the center of Navadvip, dancing on two legs, with two legs raised upward, dancing in ecstasy, tears coming from his eyes, hair standing on end, and all of Navadvip heard that this puppy dog is dancing in ecstasy. And revealing these symptoms, the whole city came to see this miracle. And then in front of everyone, waving, the puppy dog went back to Godhead. Now someone may say, if the mind can keep a puppy dog, why can't I keep a puppy dog? Isn't it? So you can do it if you can guarantee that within days you'll make him chant Hare Krishna, dance on two legs, make him lift his hands, and if you can't guarantee, then you have no right. He's God. Lord Shiva was able to swallow a whole ocean of poison in his neck, isn't it? Hold it in his neck. So we can't imitate. But even if you want to imitate, you have to make sure that you can make a puppy dog into a devotee. So the Lord Chaitanya was so powerful. I don't know if some of you have seen the picture. Once he was traveling and he was passing through a forest called the Jarakhand Forest. And in the Jarakhand Forest, there were animals, tigers, lions, elephants, deer. And what did Lord Chaitanya do? He made them chant and dance. So he's God. God can do anything. We can't try and limit God with our material senses. So these are just some childhood pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are many more, but I'm just debating whether we should get to some philosophy that I wanted to discuss. You want to hear some more pastimes? The mind became a very prominent Sanskrit scholar at a young age. At 500 years ago, Navadvip, when the mind had appeared, was the intellectual capital of the world. All these prominent Sanskrit scholars were residing there, and Nimai had defeated virtually all the scholars. That's why he became known as Pandit. Pandit means one who is very learned. These, as you see, Pandit, they have a family title of Pandit, but they need not be learned. They could have a debauchee character. But Pandit generally means one who is very learned. So Nimai Pandit was very learned, and there was also a very prominent Sanskrit scholar at that time whose name was Keshav Kashmiri. Keshav Kashmiri was a Sanskrit scholar and he had virtually defeated every Sanskrit scholar in the country. And he had information that in Navadvip there resides a young boy who's a very prominent Sanskrit scholar. So Keshav Kashmiri sent information to Navadvip. I want to come and have a debate. Please select a team from your city that would debate with me. So the pundits had a meeting and they said, oh, Keshav Kashmiri wants to come to our town to have a debate. Who is going to represent us? Everyone was scared. Keshav Kashmiri was such a prominent Sanskrit scholar that people would just get scared hearing his name. So the Sanskrit pundits decided that they would field Nimai against him. Nimai was a young boy. How old? 10, 11 years old at that time. And Keshav Kashmiri was a lot more elder. So they were thinking that if Keshav Kashmiri managed to defeat Nimai, then they would say he only defeated a bachcha after all. He defeated a kid. And if Nimai defeats him, then what would they say? If a child from a town can defeat him, where is the question of we adults? So they had a debate. Nimai was giving a class at the age of 8, 9. He had started a Sanskrit school. And he was teaching his students on the banks of the river, of the Ganga. You know, these days they have concrete jungles everywhere, you know. But those days, people would sit underneath trees with open air. Now when you have a chance to get in the open air, don't you love it? Because everyone's so tired of city life, people just love to get out of city life. So, Nimai was over there teaching his students when Keshav Kashmiri came there with his followers and a whole band. Keshav Kashmiri said, are you Nimai, the prominent Sanskrit scholar? Nimai treated him very respectfully. Kesha Keshwari said, I want to learn about you. I'd like to hear some of your compositions in Sanskrit. Rimani said, I'm a child compared to you. You please first compose something. So Kesha Keshwari composed 100 verses glorifying Mother Ganges in 1 hour. And after composing them, he asked Rimai, so, what do you think about these compositions? Rimai said, they're very good, but these are the defects. And Rimai was able to repeat all the 100 shlokas and point out the mistakes. So when Keshav Keshwari heard Rimai repeating all the 100 verses, he was shocked. He said, I spoke at the speed of the wind. How are you able to memorize them by hearing once? In Sanskrit, there's a word called Shruti Dhara, which means that somebody can memorize something just by hearing once. Just like when the Srimad Bhagavatam was being spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, there were thousands of sages present there. And one of the sages present was a sage called Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami was able to memorize the Bhagavatam, 18,000 shlokas, just by hearing once. And a little later, in Navasharanya, when the sages were having a discussion, and they requested Suta Goswami to guide them, Suta Goswami was able to repeat all the 18,000 verses that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. He repeated the entire Bhagavatam again. So one who can memorize and repeat something just by hearing once is called the Shruti Dhara. So Nimai, when he pointed out the faults in Kesha Keshwari's composition, Kesha Keshwari could not answer. So Nimai's students began to make fun of Kesha Keshwari. But Kesha Keshwari could not defend himself against Nimai's points. So Nimai's students began to make fun. But Nimai stopped his students from making fun. He said, no, today Kesha Keshwari is tired. He'll reply tomorrow. So Nimai showed us how we should receive our guests. His followers were going to embarrass him, but he stopped them. And Kesha Keshwari, that night, he was a devotee of goddess Saraswati, the goddess of learning. So Kesha Keshwari fell at the feet of goddess Saraswati and pleaded, please help me! You've always spoken through me, but today you didn't speak through me. Goddess Saraswati said, this Nimai is not an ordinary child. He is the, what is he? Supreme Personality of Godhead. So next day, he came and surrendered to Nimai. So the very wonderful pastimes I was thinking today are reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela chapter 22, where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami. Goswami means one who can control the mind and senses. And as you know, there are 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan. Who are they? Who knows their names? Huh? Rupa Goswami. Jiva Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. So the 6 Goswamis, and actually, they all came from very elevated backgrounds. Like Rupa and Sanatan, from childhood, they were scholars. They could speak various languages. And they were very, very popular with the people. And they were forced by the Mohammedan king to run his kingdom because they were extremely popular with the people. At that time, the population of Bengal was almost all Hindus. And it was a Mohammedan king. So he was looking for somebody who was very popular with the people to run his kingdom. So even though they had no interest, but he was a king. There was no judiciary system like in America. You can go on to the court even against the president. So they had no choice. But they were running the kingdom. So they were running the kingdom means what? They had capabilities, isn't it? Then Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a millionaire. He was the only son and he came from a very aristocratic background. But all his Goswamis took shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa and Sanatan on the process of devotional service, which they later on explained in many of their books. The literature left behind by the Goswamis is very vast. Jiva Goswami, the nephew, alone composed more than 400,000 verses. And we have devotees in ISKCON who are translating the Sandarbhas and many of the writings of the great Goswamis. So Rupa Goswami gave us many books, but Prabhupada translated two of his books. Which are they? Nectar of Devotion and Nectar of Instruction. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave very valuable instructions to Rupa and Sanatan. And these are nicely described in the chapter called The Process of Devotional Service, which is chapter 22 in the Madhya Leela section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are three principal sources of knowledge about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings. One is the Chaitanya Charitamrita, compiled by Krishna Das Kaviraj. At an old age, an inspiration from Nityananda, he started compiling this book. Then there's another book called the Chaitanya Bhagavat, compiled by Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is considered an incarnation of whom? Vyasadeva. And there are many pastimes in Chaitanya Bhagavat that are described in brief in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are many pastimes in Chaitanya Charitamrita described in detail that are described in brief in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Because these authors were not trying to outsmart each other. If they saw that another author has covered a pastime in detail, then they only gave a summary presentation. Just like if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's only a 2-chapter summary of the Ramayana. The Ramayana is such a comprehensive piece of literature. But the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami says, since there are already commentaries on the Ramayana, I will give only a summary presentation. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, only the 9th canto, there are 2 chapters that summarize key points of the entire Ramayana. So Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat both have very detailed information, but many of the pastimes are not repeated in detail in both the scriptures. Prabhupada translated Chaitanya Charitamrita first, because Chaitanya Charitamrita has a lot of philosophy. Prabhupada used to say that Bhagavad Gita is comparable to high school, Bhagavatam is comparable to college, and Chaitanya Charitamrita to postgraduate. It's postgraduate. But, as you said the other day, you can read all at the same time also. It's not necessary that only you finish reading the entire Bhagavatam 12 cantos, then you're going to start the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada summarized the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita in a book called Teaching the Lord Chaitanya. Teaching the Lord Chaitanya is a medium-sized book in which the main pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are summarized. Especially in Chaitanya, in the Teaching of Lord Chaitanya, there's a lot of philosophy, endless pastimes. So as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami of the process of devotional service, he gave him 6 points as to which are essential to surrender to the Supreme Lord. But before he came to that, he described the following. He explains how the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another, and how Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagavado Ji Guru Krishna Kripa Pai Bhakti Lata. Beej means seed of devotional service. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that after going through many, many births and deaths, is he the fortunate soul who receives the Bhakti Lata seed. Now, most of you have big houses. I often tell the devotees in North America that all of you live like kings. I mean, I travel in many parts of the world, in East Africa, Russia, India, and I have to admit that by Krishna's grace, you devotees have the best facilities in the world. In Russia, no doubt, there's a lot of uplands. Somebody told me Russia, Moscow is the most upland city in the world. It may be, but our devotees are unfortunately not in the oligarch family. Oligarchs are the billionaires. Our devotees are all in the middle class families. So, all of you have nice houses and you have gardens in the back and in the front. So, anyone knows, you may have the best of seeds, but the seed will only fructify if you do what? If you water the seed. If you don't water the seed, then the seed is not going to grow. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that one receives the seed of devotional service after going through many, many, many births and deaths. And now having received that seed, that knowledge about devotional service, we have to water the seed so that the seed may grow. And that watering process is compared to, what is it compared to? The process of hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting form the basis of our spiritual life. Hearing and chanting is the power through which we can attack the anarthas. The anarthas are very strong. The anarthas bewilder us, but the anarthas can be corrected only on the strength of devotional service. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that if we want the devotional kripa to grow, then what should we do? We should regularly water this seed through the process of hearing and chanting. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises us that we should have regular spiritual association. This is known as Sadhu Sangha. Because if we don't have spiritual association, then it's hard for the devotional people to grow. Yeah, we all have experience. Sometimes you may go on business, traveling away from devotee association. You feel bad. When you have devotee association, you feel a lot better. Of course, the Prabhupada's mercy, we virtually have ISKCON temples in every corner of the globe. Whether you go to the west coast of America, or South America, or East Africa, or West Africa, or any part, I think almost in every corner of the globe there is some ISKCON temple or the other. But spiritual association is very necessary. That's why when Prabhupada established ISKCON, he established a Sunday program. The Sunday program was a program that Prabhupada devised of so that people who do jobs, businesses, can come once a week, have spiritual association, and be reminded about the importance of spiritual life. So Lord Chaitanya said, we should build a strong fencing around us. That means that we should keep ourselves in the midst of devotee association. If you keep yourself in the midst of devotee association, one big advantage is you will always be reminded about what should be a prime duty, isn't it? And sometimes we have a tendency to get distracted, isn't it? We have a tendency to get distracted because illusory forces are always trying to bewilder us. Whereas if you are constantly in the service of in devotee association, then that can be corrected. Then that can be checked. So Lord Chaitanya advises anyone who wants to pursue spiritual life to have devotee association. In the scriptures it is explained that we can have devotee association at three levels. One is associating with those who are more advanced. The other is associating with those who are equally advanced. The third is associating with those who are less advanced. Now the Muni advises in the Bhagavatam how we should behave in each of these three different situations. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Narada Muni advises that when you have the association, when you have the opportunity to associate with somebody more advanced, then you should become joyful. When you have the opportunity to associate with somebody who is equally advanced, you should make friendship. And when you have the opportunity to associate with somebody less advanced, you should display compassion. So we'll just discuss this a little bit, but this is a very important point in our endeavor to make spiritual advancement. So first thing, the other body says, if you meet somebody more advanced, you should become joyful. You may say, why? Why should I be joyful when I meet somebody more advanced? Because if you meet somebody more advanced, you're going to get some knowledge that's going to inspire you to take the process of devotional service more seriously. Of course, there are sometimes individuals who want to avoid association of those who are more advanced. There are some who are anxious to get association of those who are more advanced, and there are some who are anxious to avoid their association. And you may say, why? The ones who are anxious to associate with those who are more advanced are identified as those who are serious about spiritual advancement. And the ones who make plans how to avoid the association of more advanced, they are the ones who don't want to make spiritual advancement. So they're worried. If I associate with them, they will tell me, chant, 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 and I don't want to chant. So the best way is, I just avoid that association. In the Bhagavatam, there's an example given that is of a peacock. You know, peacocks, when they see clouds for the first time, they really get into ecstasy. So a devotee is happy when he meets somebody who is more advanced. Then, what do you do when you meet somebody equally advanced? What do you do? You make friendship. Now what does it mean? In material world, friendship means I scratch your back, you scratch my back. You help me to enjoy, I help you to forget the Lord, and I, isn't it? So what does spiritual friendship mean? It says when you meet somebody equally advanced, you make friendship. So spiritual friendship means you engage in spiritual discussion. You engage in discussion of topics like how can we make spiritual advancement? Maybe if you're even more enthusiastic, you can talk about spiritual subject matters. After all, spiritual subject matters are so vast that even if you talk all day, you still won't get tired. So, your friendship means you discuss spiritual topics. And when you meet somebody who's less advanced, what do? You display compassion. Just like all of you who are sitting here, are practicing Krishna consciousness to some degree or another. Now you meet somebody who is addicted to drinking, meat eating and all that, then what do you feel? You know he's wasting his life, isn't it? So you, if you're sincere, you try to preach to him. Am I right? Doesn't matter whether you're initiated or not. If you have knowledge what is right and what's wrong, you try to preach, isn't it? So when you meet somebody less advanced, we should display compassion. So now the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises we should keep ourselves in spiritual association. Prabhupada says in his commentary to this point, he says in the material world, when somebody meets somebody who is inferior, he tries to exploit him. Am I right? It's a world of cheaters and cheaters, isn't it? Do people exploit in America? And they have a child. And when you meet somebody equally advanced in the material world, what happens? You're busy showing off how I'm better off than you. Isn't that what the material world is? You try to show off. If this guy buys a Nissan, you buy a Toyota. He buys a BMW, you buy a Mercedes. You want everyone to show off, oh, I'm a step ahead of you. Am I right? That is material life. So, Lord Chaitanya said, take devotee association. Then Lord Chaitanya also said, sometimes on the devotional path, along with the devotional creeper, unwanted creepers also grow. Unwanted creeper means, I'm a devotee, I'm chanting, I'm initiated, but I become very proud. See? I'm chanting, I'm such a big scholar. I become arrogant. So, we become proud, we develop pride due to various reasons. You may be chanting 16 rounds, you become proud. See, I'm chanting 16 rounds, the other guys are all neophytes. Then I'm initiated, he's not. I'm a Brahmin, he's not. I'm such a big scholar. The guy's illiterate. So you become proud and arrogant, etc. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that when these unwanted creepers begin to develop, they should be plucked out. Just like in your body, when you see some symptoms of pain developing, pus developing, you at once take care to arrest it, isn't it? You don't let it grow, especially if it's in a delicate portion of your body. So, similarly, these unwanted weeds can be identified with the help of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and then if you see them, you should take them out. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains six principles of Sharanagati. So I would like to read this verse to you. You probably heard this verse before. It's a very famous verse. Anukalasya sankalpa pratikalyasya varjanam rakshajirati vishvaso gobatatya varnam tatha atma nekshepa karpanye sadvida sharanagati. The translation is as follows. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full self-surrender and humility. So there are six factors or six essential divisions of surrender that Lord Chaitanya has pointed out. Sharanagati means to take shelter. So whether you are brahmachari or grihastha, doesn't matter. A real goal is what? To take shelter of the Lord, isn't it? It's not, sometimes people think, well, I'm in the household of Rasaram, so I have full liberty. This taking shelter is only for the sannyasis or brahmachari. No. Anybody who wants to advance spiritually has to take shelter. Just like Krishna also says, Sarva dharmam paritajya maam ekam ham tvam sarva papa bhav mokshami vasita. Krishna says, give up all right to the religious and just surrender to me and I'll protect you. So people, sometimes devotees want to know, how can I surrender to Krishna? What does Krishna really mean when he says, give up everything and surrender to me? Do I have to become a brahmachari in the temple? No, you don't. You can stay where you are. You can stay family situation. You can stay doing a job, business, and still surrender. Here, Krishna gives us, Lord Chaitanya is giving us further understanding of what it means to surrender to the Lord. So if you want to surrender to the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has listed six factors. The first is anukul yasya. Now, anukul yasya means things which are favorable for spiritual advancement. And the next word used is pratikul yasya. And pratikul yasya means the opposite. Unfavorable. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you accept what is favorable for spiritual advancement and you reject what is unfavorable for spiritual advancement. Is that hard to understand? No. Isn't that normal that we do in our day-to-day lives? Let's say you're a businessman and somebody comes to you with a transaction. So what are you going to do? You're going to calculate and see, am I going to make a profit in this or a loss? Am I right? And if there's a profit, you'll accept it. And if there's a loss, you won't accept it, isn't it? Just like these days, all over the world, but mostly in North America, people are very health conscious, isn't it? So before they take something, they want to see what the ingredients are, favorable, unfavorable. So similarly, we should, doesn't matter whether you're chanting 2 rounds, 4 rounds, 6 rounds, 8 rounds, if your ultimate goal is self-realization, then we should also try and see what is favorable, what is unfavorable. Now, there's a book by Rupa Goswami called Sri Upadeshamrita, presented as Nectar of Instruction. And in that book, Rupa Goswami has given us guidelines. For example, Rupa Goswami says, Utsaha Nishtaya Dharya Tat Tat Karma Pravatana Sangha Vrata Sato Vrata Sadvir Bhakti Prasidati. He says, he gives various guidelines how we can advance on the devotional path. Chanting Hare Krishna, studying the books, regularly associating with devotees, offering what you eat to the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you eat foodstuff without offering to the Lord, what are you eating? How many of you eat only prasad? So Krishna says, if you eat without offering to me, what are you eating? Only sin. So our standard should be, you have to eat. So you should eat Krishna prasad. So eating Krishna prasad, associating with devotees, chanting, having the mood of service, these are all considered to be favorable factors. Then he says, what is unfavorable may be rejected. So what are some of the factors unfavorable for spiritual advancement? Maybe we'll make our class a little interactive now. What are some of the unfavorable factors? Now you have the associated worldly-minded people in any case, isn't it? Even if you're a devotee, you go to preach, you have to associate with worldly-minded people. You are doing a job, you're a doctor, you have to operate on non-devotees. You are a businessman, you have to associate with worldly-minded people, isn't it? So, we can't avoid associating with worldly-minded people, but what you can do is the following. You associate with worldly-minded people to the extent necessary and not more. Just like we're going to preach. So you preach to worldly-minded people. Well, you preach to them, associate with them to the extent necessary and not more, isn't it? So we associate with, but if we associate beyond what's necessary, then that's bad. So what are some of the other factors that are detrimental for spiritual advancement? Not chanting a japa, isn't it? Not chanting japa, not associating with devotees, not studying, overeating, over-endeavoring. Sometimes we endeavor so hard, we endeavor for material life. We endeavor so hard and there's no time for spiritual life, isn't it? Sometimes we beg people, please, don't ignore your spiritual life. They say, no, wait, give me another 10 years. I'm going to make so much money, build a house, put everything in savings and then retire. But it never happens. So better lead a balanced life from the beginning. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, accept everything that's favorable for spiritual advancement and reject everything unfavorable. That's easy to understand. Then he says, we should have the conviction that Krishna will give us protection. The problem is that we are not convinced that Krishna will give me protection. Our conviction that Krishna will give protection is very weak. Am I right? You devotees have faith that Krishna will give you protection. You come to the temple, you chant. But there's so many people who don't have that same faith. They may be telling you, hey, why are you so foolish spending time doing Java? Better if you do something else, isn't it? So, how do we make our conviction that Krishna will give us protection? Krishna has many names. One of Krishna's names is Bhakta Vatsala. Bhakta Vatsala means he is the protector of his devotees. Then Krishna also tells Arjuna to declare to the world that my devotee will never perish. So how do we really understand that Krishna will give him protection? On the battle of Kurukshetra, you know the famous pastime, the battle had gone on for so many days and the Pandavas were all still alive. So Duryodhan went to Bhishma Dev, the great warrior, and said, I think you're being too soft on your nephews. How is it the battle's gone on for so many days and none of them are even injured? They're not even bleeding. They don't even have a cut. In a war, you really want to strike the enemy, isn't it? So, Bhishma Dev said, he was a Kshatriya. Even though he had a soft heart with the Pandavas, his integrity was being questioned. So he made 5 sharp arrows that he was going to use the next day. The battle of Kurukshetra was not like the present-day wars. The present-day wars are inhuman wars. You bomb many times, you throw a bomb, you don't know whether you're going to kill the culprit or the innocent. Many times a bomb falls half a kilometer away. You know, it's a funny war. But the battle of Kurukshetra was, if you want to call it in simple language, a gentleman's war. The two sides would fight in the daytime, and in the evening they would sit together and eat. And in the morning they would go back to their respective positions. Isn't that amazing? Have you heard of such a war in today's world? So, Dura, Bhishma Dev had made 5 sharp arrows, and he hit it. That he was going to use the next morning. And before the battle started, as you know, Krishna had declared that he would not take part in the battle. So Bhishma Dev, on the one hand, he was fighting valiantly because he was being chastised by Duryodhana. But on the other hand, Bhishma Dev also wanted to show to the world that Krishna is so attached to his devotees that even if Krishna has to break his promise, he'll break his promise but protect his devotee. So, Bhishma Dev had prepared his 5 sharp arrows, and these arrows were very powerful. Krishna knew that these arrows were used the next day in battle, the Pandavas would all die. So Krishna told Arjuna, these 5 arrows are located in this place. So Arjuna stole them in the night. And miserably, when he went in the morning to look for the arrows were not there. So Bhishmadev knew that nobody could have done this. Nobody knew where he had hidden except Krishna. So he decided to fight in anger. But then Krishna broke his promise and rescued the Pandavas and Arjuna. So Krishna is the protector of his devotees. This doesn't mean that the devotee doesn't make an effort to protect himself. But the point is that Krishna protects his devotees. And there's so many examples on this point. So one of the third point in surrendering, or the principle of surrender, is to accept the principle of that Krishna will give me protection. If I give my time to chant Hare Krishna, if I give my life to read the books and serve the Lord in addition to doing my professional duties, this will not give away in vain. And our faith that Krishna will give me protection will become stronger as you practice. Just like they say, practice makes a man perfect, isn't it? The more you practice an instrument, the better you can play. The more you practice your profession, the more expert you become, isn't it? So similarly, practice makes a man perfect. And the more you practice, the more you practice devotional service, the more you practice the art of chanting, reading, etc., the greater will be your realization that Krishna will give me protection. So the third principle of surrender to the Lord is what? That Krishna will give me protection. Then what is the fourth? The fourth principle is to understand that Krishna is the supreme maintainer and master. Krishna is the supreme maintainer. Krishna is above even the demigods. The demigods are subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Krishna is the supreme maintainer and supplier. Therefore, we focus on Krishna. Just like it is said, Eka Ishwar Krishna Asa Bhritaya. The scriptures maintain that Krishna is the ultimate maintainer and supplier. So the fourth principle of surrender is to understand that Krishna is the one's guardian or master. We recognize Krishna as the supreme. Just like it is said, pour water on the root, different branches all get nourished. When you put food in the stomach, the entire body feels strengthened, isn't it? So by serving Krishna, we're also discharging all our obligations towards the demigod, etc. Now, what is the fifth principle of surrender? Fifth principle of surrender, Sharanagati, is to make our desires consistent with the desires of the Lord. Normally we think that my desire should be God's desire. Am I right? Isn't that what we would all love? Let's be honest. Whatever is my desire, God should fulfill that. We all want God to be our order supplier. Am I right? We make a wish list and we want the Lord to fulfill our wish list. We forget that we have a history of karma. We forget that we have debits and credits. And we forget that we also have to experience the reaction of our past. We forget all that. So, a person in a neophyte condition thinks that my desire should be God's desire. And whatever I desire should be fulfilled by the Lord. But here Lord Chaitanya is giving us a different instruction. Here Lord Chaitanya is describing the fifth principle of is self-surrender. Thank you. Keep in touch. Thank you. We have a bus to catch. The fifth principle is what? Self-surrender. That means remembering that our desires should be based on the desires of the Lord. And if you're in doubt whether you're on the right track or not, how can you correct yourself? By taking help of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. The three parallel tracks on which the devotional endeavor proceeds. We have the Shastras, the words of God, there in the revealed scriptures, and we are so fortunate that we have Srila Prabhupada's translation of these books in English and virtually every major language of the world. So you can study what the scriptures have to say even in today's environment. Then you have asadhus, the spiritual masters who have been descending in the disciplic succession, who are also explaining what the scriptures are saying. Just like if you read Prabhupada's books, you will see in most shlokas is a purport. Now what is in those purports? Prabhupada has taken the summary of the purports written by the previous acharyas, added on what was necessary, and presented it in the form of purports. So when you read the purports, you are getting the explanation of Prabhupada and the previous acharya. And then, of course, the spiritual master or the guru. So if you want to know whether your desires are consistent with the teachings of the Lord, then take the help. Don't hesitate. Rupa Goswami says, the dati pradigranati guhya prati achati bhunakte bhujate chaiva sad vidim priti lakshanam. Rupa Goswami says that there should be six types of rasas amongst devotees, isn't it? Reveal your mind to those who are advanced, take instructions, give charity, receive charity, offer prasad, give prasad. We do that. We offer prasad, we take prasad, we invite devotees for prasad and we eat in other people's homes. We give in charity knowledge, receive in exchange some donations. We reveal our mind to those who are more advanced, take instructions from them. So, by indulging in the six types of rasas, one can know what's right, what's wrong. And what's the sixth principle of surrender? Who knows? Humility. We covered five, isn't it? What was the first? Accept everything favorable. Second, reject everything unfavorable. Third was what? Conviction that Krishna will give me. And what is the fourth? Krishna is my maintainer and master, nobody else. What is the fifth? Self-surrender. Self-surrender means I make my desires consistent upon the desires of the Lord. And the sixth is?
Humility.
Humility means ready to be corrected, ready to take guidance, ready to offer all respects to others without expecting anything in exchange. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, more tolerant than a tree and more humble than a blade of grass. Everyone sitting here has an interest in spiritual life. Everyone sitting here is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So that's why I took up this topic, because in this assembly there will be mainly devotees already practicing Krishna consciousness. So now that you all are practicing, you have to understand the philosophy also. And these six principles of surrender are very helpful, and if you can keep them in mind, that will help you to make spiritual advancement. So these are nicely explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Lord Chaitanya gave these six principles of surrender, and the devotee, he depends on Krishna, he makes the effort, and still depends on Krishna. Krishna is in everyone's heart, he's ready to guide us. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvata Chaam Hedi Sanivesto Mataha Smriti Jnanam Apahanam Cha. I am in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance and forgetfulness. So Krishna sees, we really want to make advancement. We want to follow these things, division of surrender. Krishna will help us. And when Krishna sees we're not so serious, he reciprocates accordingly. Krishna doesn't want to force us to serve. So as we chant and associate, we'll get the strength to follow these six principles of surrender. Hare Krishna.